the volume.
Oral Sessions is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Oral Sessions, everybody. What a fun episode this one is. Not only was this guy a great guest, we got to do it in person. Man, what a difference it is to be able to do stuff in person. I feel like we've all gotten so used to doing things on Zoom, which is great and fine. And I feel like we all like started Zooming and having meetings or like recording shows and whatever. We were kind of all talking over each other and couldn't pick up on like the cues of when someone was going to begin to talk or finish talking. And everyone's a little bit different when you're going like interview to interview, that you kind of get in those rhythms and it all starts to feel normal and fine. But being able to do it in person, man, what a game changer. So nice. I got to do that more often. I mean, people come into Vegas. It's a hub. It's a spot for people to be. I mean, can I get Shania on the Twain? Shania on the Twain? Wow. Shania Twain on the show. I did have a glass of wine before I started recording this, so that's why I just said it like that. Also, mom brain. Can we call it mom brain? We can call it that. Who else is in Vegas that I could get that's like just here? I mean, obviously people are coming in and they're like on vacations or people just like pop through. It's not far from Los Angeles and I can bring people into my house and have a little hangout. So Arya Daivari is my guest on the show today and we enjoyed a little coffee together. We had a little hangout, got to shoot the shit before we got in here and started recording the show. He brought over an adorable little onesie for sweet baby Nora. So shout out to him for just being a straight up stand-up man. And just had a cool chat. You know, I've never really even got to chat that much in depth with him before during our time in WWE together. Cause like, you know, there's a million people and you're all pulled in so many different directions. So it was cool to be able to just kind of pick his brain and learn more about him and him as a wrestler, him as a person. So I feel like you guys are gonna dig this little chit chat that we had. Anyways, think of more people that I should have in person to do oral sessions. Get your brains working. Send me some tweets. Let me know who's in Las Vegas so we can get. I mean, obviously UFC's in town. You can get some UFC fighters. WWE's in town for SummerSlam. We've got some of that coming up. So yeah, let me know. Anyways, here we go. Let's get into it. Here's Arya Daivari.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited that we're like in the same room.
I know.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, yeah. It's first time in a while that I've had time to just sit around and not do anything. So I figured come out to Vegas and do a little partying.
Does it feel weird to just have free time?
The fact that we just kind of came off COVID.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit used to it, mm-hmm. but it still is kind of weird. It's weird when you're sitting at home, totally healthy, no injuries, no nothing. Wrestling's going on.
Yeah.
Because that was the only difference about COVID. It's when I was sitting at home, a lot of people were sitting at home.
Sure.
But right now, like, wrestling.
Well, to be fair, there's still a lot of people sitting at home.
Yes, fair enough. But there's a lot of awesome wrestling going on right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like having to sit home and just watch it. So it's kind of like making me all like antsy,
yeah.
You know, like get out and do stuff. But that time's coming.
So you're close. September yes. 23rd, your non-compete is up the 90 yes. days.
Yeah.
Do you just have like a calendar up and like marking down the days till you're ready to
hit the ground running? I'm literally counting down the days. But yeah, I'm starting to get all my bookings figured out and I can start talking to other companies a little bit more seriously.
Yeah.
So yes, I cannot wait until the 23rd.
So of course it's like unfortunate to be released from a contract, to be in that situation, but kind of there couldn't be a better time for it to happen, right?
The fact that AEW, Impact, New Japan, MLW, NWA, all these places are starting to blow up. AAA now is getting more exposure in America.
Yeah.
Like it is. There used to be a time where if you weren't wrestling in WWE, like there wasn't a lot of other places. There were other places to go.
Yeah.
But who knows what kind of publicity you would get, what kind of money you'd get, what kind of matches you'd get. But now the talent is everywhere. The exposure is everywhere. There's Fight TV and stuff like that.
With
all the even smaller independent companies now have big channels on YouTube. I think like Beyond Wrestling has like a million subscribers on YouTube and stuff
People
like that.
People love wrestling.
It couldn't be a better time to be a free agent.
Yeah, it's really a cool time. And also given your style and, you know, you came into WWE through the Cruiserweight Championship Tournament.
moment, working through 205 Live, which, what's your take on 205 Live and through the cruiserweight division and what kind of happened there?
It's kind of twofold. For one, the cruiserweight division obviously gave smaller guys like me an opportunity to work in the WWE. My entire life, I always said, I'm going to be in the WWE. I'm going to wrestle there. I know I will. But in the back of my head, you go, you're also 5'10", you know, an average WWE wrestler. The guys I always looked up to were these giant hosses of men. So I always wonder, I said,
well, it just seems that way when you have someone standing.
Angle up a little bit.
It didn't really work out that way.
But so there was always, that was the only thing that I was like, that might be the only roadblock I have. They say, hey, you're a great wrestler, good look, all that kind of stuff, but you just don't fit the size bill.
Sure.
So when they came up with this Cruiserweight Classic and they said, hey, we're going to give another run at the Cruiserweight division, I was very grateful for that. And obviously all the guys who are in it are kind of guys who are in the same position I was. We're all talented wrestlers. We've all been grinding away for 10 years. We all had tryouts and looks and all that kind of stuff. And I think we all knew deep down, like, man, the only thing that's going to hold me back is if they're not into my size.
Right.
So
what a kick in the dick that is.
I know, right?
Like, well, there's something you can do. So yeah, thank God to get the Cruiserweight division back.
That was really cool. Now, on the other side of the token, I just know in the history of how WWE does things, once you have that like cruiserweight stamp on you, it might be really like swimming upstream the entire time, because at the end of the day, it's still Vince McMahon's show. Mm-hmm. He still likes big giant dudes and stuff like that. So that sounds funny to say, but
he does. The man likes what he likes.
He likes big giant dudes. Yeah. And so that was the only thing. I was happy that it created an opportunity for me to finally wrestle in WWE. But I also knew, I said, I didn't want to be labeled a cruiserweight. When I was an independent wrestler for 10 years, I was never a cruiserweight. I was never a lightweight, because independent wrestling, it's all shapes and sizes. Sure. It doesn't matter. So,
but even WWE in general still is that. I mean, you look at somebody like a Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, and some of these guys that might not have necessarily also fit that same build, but here they are main eventing, you know, WrestleManias and pay-per-views and all that.
And that, I think that really helped. You know, I like to give credit to guys like Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, and honestly, even Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is a guy who is a smaller guy in like the combat world of sports. And I think back in the day, it was always looked at like heavyweights were the draws, you know, the Mike Tysons of the world. Someone like Conor McGregor showed that you can be a smaller guy and still be like a legitimate athlete. You can still be a badass and people still want to pay to see you.
Yeah.
So I think he helped with that. Daniel Bryan helped with that. AJ Styles helped with that. So I think that finally pushed WWE to say like, look, you need to look beyond people's size and just look at their raw skill and their talent. And if they can bring something,
you can be a star within that company.
If you can bring good wrestling to the table, and thankfully wrestling fans, especially today, they appreciate good wrestling. So I think they'll look past the fact. And honestly, if you're a big jacked up dude who can't wrestle, like, that's a bad thing.
That's
like,
terrible. There's no getting past that.
That's a prejudice that some fans might have. Sure. They say like, ah, just another one of these guys. So there was a while where the smaller, I feel like from 2014 up until 2020, I should throw the Young Bucks in there too. They were obviously guys who I think the WWOs looked at them like, what's their deal? They're smaller guys. But then they went off and killed and became the most popular tag team in the world. Yeah. So a lot of these guys kind of paved the way for this cruiserweight division to finally be taken a little bit seriously. And like I said, like 205, I mean, it's still running right now. I don't know exactly what's going on with it, but the show had a pretty solid 5-year run, which I think in the WWE, that's not bad for cruiserweights.
Not bad. Yeah. It's not bad. No, it's not bad to look at it all. But yeah, it's like, I think that you look at sort of what you assume and what we know that WWE wants, what Vince McMahon wants, versus what fans want now, because fans do want to see all of these different styles of wrestling. And that's why, I mean, you rattled off all these other promotions, whether they're on TV or they've got like a YouTube presence or whatever they might be doing. And they're all thriving and doing really well, because nobody just wants that cookie cutter mold of just this giant jacked dude.
Right.
It's having all these different platforms for people to jump to. So yeah, I mean, it just seems like such a cool time to really dip your toes into this water and like be back in control of your own career.
100%. And the other thing too, is that like, it always kind of bothered me that WWE looked at this size thing when in reality, like being a WWE wrestler, like I'm sure John told you and you being there yourself, it's a very hard job. If you're not dedicated to professional wrestling, if you haven't dedicated your life to your to the craft of professional wrestling, I don't think it's going to work out for you. So a lot of the guys who are on 205, me, Ali, Gulak, Lindsay, Tony, like we're all very dedicated to pro wrestling. We love pro wrestling. We took it extremely seriously when we were on the independent scene. So it was always kind of weird to me that I was like, WWE should want that. You should want guys who say like, you know, I'm here for this business. I'm here to die for the business. Like all that kind of shit. Like WWE should be like, hell yeah. Like these are the guys we want on our team who want to grind it out, who want to travel 300 days a year and stuff like
do
that.
Those house shows and like get, yeah, I mean,
but they use, sometimes they'll use your love and passion for pro wrestling against you a little bit. So it's kind of, it was always kind of weird to me that I said, you should want like a roster full of guys who just absolutely love professional wrestling and they care about it and they took it upon themselves to learn the road and all that kind of stuff before they got to WWE. So it was just kind of weird to me that sometimes those guys like, ah, like we don't want to go with this guy. We'll go with this football player who like this was his second choice, you know, like football was his first love, wrestling's his backup choice.
What do you think that kind of stems from? Of sort, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of that feeling, or even like the people that sort of seem like they don't really necessarily want to be there all the time and they don't want to do that grind. What is that thing that just is it like wanting to date the girl that doesn't really want to date you?
maybe I don't know. And like the funny thing is my brother always told me, he goes, the day you stop giving a fuck is the day they're going to like push you. But I said, I can never not give a fuck. Like I care about this so much. Like I can't just be like, nah, whatever. I'll just phone it into my match tonight. Right. Like I couldn't do that. I don't have like the confidence to go out there and have a shitty match and be like, eh, whatever. Like, right. No, I have to like, you're only as good as your last match. So I have to like wrestle my ass off every time. So I don't know where that comes from. But on the flip side too, look, there's been tons of guys who've come from other sports. Look at The Rock. The Rock was a football player. Yeah. He said it before. He was trying to make it to the NFL. It didn't work out. And then he went to pro wrestling. But
he at least has a family lineage.
Yeah, he has a family lineage and he actually really, really loved it. But yeah. When I did my tryout a few times when I was at the PC, like I remember at my tryout, I met this like bodybuilder guy. So I was like, oh, like, you know, what's your story? And this and that. He's like, oh, they emailed me to come here. I blew it off. And then they emailed me again and I blew it off. Then they called me. So like, here I am. Like, what about you? I'm like, well, I've been wrestling for like 8 years, dying to be here. But I don't know. It's weird. Like I said, I think but that's the nice thing about all these other companies that I listed. I think they're the ones who say, no, we want the guys who are on board with professional wrestling. Yeah. And I've been saying this in every interview. I said, AEW is a company. I said, they're doing pro wrestling right. Like, I love pro wrestling. I know like when I was in WWE, like, don't say pro wrestling. I'm like, this is pro wrestling.
You're a sports entertainer, superstar.
I go, what we do is pro wrestling. What the fans want is pro wrestling. So sometimes when you give them like this, like sports entertainment bullshit, like they're not going to be into it. They want to see pro wrestling. That's what we all love. So
yeah. And I think as people become more educated on pro wrestling as well. And can you guys hear my baby crying? Yeah. Is that coming up on That's what we do when we're working at home. Sometimes the baby's crying. My mom's on it. It's fine. Yeah. She's okay. I assure you.
She'll be on the show eventually, right?
Yeah. She'll be fine. But yeah, I think as people kind of become more educated on what pro wrestling is and looks like too, they want more of that. You know, they like to be on the inside too. They don't want to be fed like, here's the guy you're supposed to love. And there's always that revolt and pushback. It's just such a, it's a tricky game.
It is.
Be a little treacherous.
And yeah, and that's the one thing is that I feel like a lot of these other companies, I've heard other people say this, and I'd say, you know, that's true. They don't insult the fans' intelligence. Sometimes I feel like WWE does that a little bit where they just try to feed them some bullshit. And if you're a lifelong wrestling fan, you kind of like see through that right away, you know, like give them pro wrestling. That's what they want. Like I get WWE's like this global entertainment company, but like you're still a wrestling company. Like your bread and butter is pro wrestling. And that's what your fans want. So other companies, I think, just do a better job of listening to what the fans want and then they give them pro wrestling.
Yeah. What was your tryout like?
So that was back in 2014. I did like the tryout where you came to TV. Remember, like when all the
I used to love those. It was, yeah. Oh my God, everyone gathered around the ring and you like, which sucks because I imagine that's kind of
once I became a actual WWE employee, it was great to sit there and watch. But when you're on the flip side, when you're doing that, it wasn't really fun.
So for people that don't know, I mean, I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably do know. But yeah, before they would do like tryouts at the PC and whatnot, they would have people come in on Raw, SmackDown days. In the tryouts would happen in the ring while the rest of the signed talent would sit around and watch you.
Yeah. And don't, and shit. And I'll be honest, like I like once I got there, I leaned into it. I became that guy. I was like sitting there with my arms folded, like, let's see what you got, kid. Because like
as soon as you realize like, oh wait, the tryouts are happening right now.
Yeah, I want to go see.
Here I go.
Cause no offense, like sometimes you see some real shitty wrestling and you'd always just be like, this is your big opportunity, your big WWE tryout. Like that's the gear you chose. That's the shape you decided to show up in. Like when I came to those, I wore like my absolutely best gear. I worked out. I tanned like 100 times. I was like, got a nice haircut. Like I was like, I got to look absolutely. The way I looked at it, I said, I have to pretend like I'm on TV. Let's pretend I'm already hired by WWE. What would I put on TV? So that's why I said, I want to look my absolute best. So I got there, I did it. Actually had a very busy day. So I did like the tryout match in front of everybody. William Regal was there. He said, oh, you did a great job.
The best.
Yeah, he's the best.
Love Regal.
I give him lots of credit, the reason why I even got my job.
Yeah.
So we did that. And the guy that I wrestled, we did well because we wrestled each other. And they said, we want to see you in a dark match. So I said, oh, awesome. Like we get to wrestle each other in front of like the crowd. Like
the guy that you did your tryout.
Yeah. Okay. He's a Minnesota guy. His name is Lewis. We wrestled so many times. So I said, man, if we get to wrestle in front of the people, like we're going to fucking tear it up.
Yeah.
But then I was like, you guys are going to tag in a handicap match against the Great Khali. And I was like, you serious? Like the Great Khali?
Oh my God.
I'm like, okay, I'm super excited to get a dark match opportunity. But I was like, the fuck am I going to do with Great Khali? Like,
get ready for that job.
And Fit Finley was our agent. So we're kind of talking to him. And I said to him, I said, like, what do you want us to do exactly? Like, can we like, are we going to like put heat on him or is it just like ding, 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 you get choke slammed and it's over.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, he goes, you're a fucking wrestler. Like figure it out. And I was like, cool. Okay.
All right,
so we go talk to Khali. We put the match together and it turned out to actually be a pretty fun tag match. Actually on YouTube, if anybody wants to watch it, some fan recorded, but it was still a very short match. You know, he just kind of threw us around a little bit. Then we stopped him and put him in the corner and just kind of like kicked his ass for a little bit. And then it turned into big chop choke slam. And that was it. But that was the first time I got to like be in front of the people. And I kind of took it as like, I think they knew like, he's obviously not going to like show out against the Great Khali. There's nothing you can really do, but they said, let's just see how he does. Let's just see if he can bump, if he can sell, if he's going to be a pain in the ass, if he's going to freeze up in front of the people, all that kind of shit. It went really well. After that, Regal pulled me aside. He said, hey, we're going to send you to the performance center to do like a tryout. Go there, do the tryout. There's a lot of great people in my tryout. That's where Kevin Owens was in my tryout. Roderick Strong, ACH, Rocky Romero, Willie Mack, like tons of great guys. And so we do the tryout. And I just told this story recently, but I'll tell it again. On the indies, I used to do this move called the magic carpet ride where I'd jump off the top rope, like holding a rug. I did it in my tryout match and like it popped all the boys. So I was like, all right, cool. I remember like the Usos were like, yo, we like that carpet thing you did. So I was like, I'm definitely going to do it because it was always the thing that people remembered me by. Yeah. Like if they didn't remember my name, they'd be like, magic carpet guy. Like, all right. So they remember. So wrestling the match, we have 8 minutes. I hit the magic carpet. We're going home. This is the finish. And all of a sudden the bell rings. I'm like, what the fuck? Like there's a big clock on the wall. I'm like, do we go over our time? Whatever. And that's when Bill DeMott was still there. And he goes, that's a foreign object disqualification. We don't do that indie bullshit here. Next. And I was just kind of like, oh shit. Yeah. I was like, did I just like fuck up my tryout just because I was like trying to do something to stand out? Yeah. But again, I just thought it was an interesting thing that I did. And then luckily Regal pulled me aside afterwards. He goes, I know what you're doing. He's like, just understand we do things differently here and blah, 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 blah. So okay.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't get picked up out of that tryout. You know, I thought I did really well. You know, everyone was telling me I was doing really well, but it didn't happen. But then 2 years later, I got the email for the CWC. So it kind of worked out from there.
Yeah. What was it like in those 2 years after, like, what happens when you don't get picked up after having a tryout like that?
You want to jump off a building?
Wrestling wasn't the same then.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
You know, a lot of these companies obviously were still existing during those times and whatnot, but like the opportunities were not as rampant as they are now.
I didn't get the job out of it. And I remember I screenshotted like my rejection email because I'm like, I'm going to fucking read this before every match I go wrestle now. Just a little fire under my eyes. I'm going to show them. But a part of me was a little defeated because I said, like, damn, that was my WWE tryout. I gave them everything I got.
Did they tell you what?
No. So they told us on that last day. They said, we'll let you know if we're going to hire you or not. And please don't reply to this email. Like, we're not going to like tell you what you did wrong or anything like that. And I was like, that's fucking dumb, but whatever. So yeah, I just got an email and said like, sorry, we don't have anything for you. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But like I said, so you give them everything you got. So I was kind of like, well, shit, I think the door for WWE is closed, you know, like they said no. And I did a promo. I did a match for them. I hung out with them for a couple of days, did all my drills and all that stuff, and they weren't interested. Yeah. So I said, maybe that's it. So that's when I kind of really started pursuing other places, you know, because I was always very WWE focused just because of my brother. You know, I saw my brother go from indies to WWE. I said, I want to follow that path. But that's when I found a tryout camp for Ring of Honor. I went and did that, and I got booked for a couple of shows there. I got to work with like Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish. So I said, you know, and like that kind of like boosted my confidence a little bit. I said, hey, you know what? Fuck it. There's like, and I remember being at those Ring of Honor shows, like the matches were all really good. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, hey, you know what? Like, fuck WWE. Like, there'll be other places I can wrestle and go kill it and stuff like that. But I don't know if me doing those other things and just kind of like staying at it and grinding it, maybe they kept me on their radar. Maybe I was always on their radar. Sure. And like I said, they just said no at that time. Like,
we know being there too, is like they kind of know in their head, like they might have seen the Cruiserweight Classic coming up down the
Yeah.
That would be perfect for them.
So then, I just kept doing that. And then just one day I woke up to an email. It said like, hey, we have a one-time opportunity with the WWE. So I was like, oh, yes. I said, okay, I have another chance to go in there and like impress and hopefully try to get a job out of it. So those 2 years were a little like unsettling just because I was like, I have to kind of find a new path in wrestling now. I used to be always like try to get straight to the WWE. But I said, okay, now I have to deviate, maybe go some other places. But like I said, when I screenshotted that email, like I was reading it a lot before matches. I was like, you ain't got nothing for me? Like, I'll make you find something for me. You know, like,
I'll find something for you to find.
But yeah, so like those 2 years, they were a little rocky, but eventually it kind of all figured itself out. Yeah.
What was it like? What do you remember of your brother's time in WWE?
Man, so I was in high school at that
time. But he's there as a producer now.
Yes.
For people that don't
know. Sean DeVar, if you don't know. Yes. No, it was cool. So obviously when he got into wrestling around like 1999. So I was, you know, 11 years old or something. Just a little kid.
Just a wee little babe.
So I was going to these indie shows in Minnesota and, you know, it was pretty cool because at any time I was on those shows, I could see like Ken Anderson, ODB, Austin Aries, you know, I think sometimes like Punk and Cabana were there too, because they're all like Midwest guys.
Yeah.
But he did like the indies for 5 years, and then I was with him the day we were sitting at my mom's house. He wasn't living there at the time, but he was just visiting. And he got a call from Jim Ross saying like, hey, we're going to hire you. And he's talking. He hangs up. He's like, I just got hired by WWE. Like, we all like jumped up. He was only 20 years old. Like, he couldn't even legally drink. And he was hired by the WWE because they had this Muhammad Hassan gimmick in mind, and they wanted my brother to be his manager and all that kind of stuff. So like, it was a trip, like just being a lifelong wrestling fan, and all of a sudden your older brother's in WWE. So he went down to Louisville. He was in OVW for a little bit. And then when he debuted on Raw, like he like called us that day. He's like, hey, we're debuting tonight. Like, oh, awesome. So me and my mom and dad were all sitting there, and like, it was a trip just to like see him. I was like, my brother's on WWE TV. And like, he was there when it was like really popping off. Like Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Eddie Guerrero, Batista, Benoit, like everybody, Rey Mysterio, Edge, like everyone in their heyday. Like, he was there with all the guys that we like watched growing up, John Cena, Randy Orton, like everybody was in there. I mean, those guys were like still kind of new. Yeah. They were like still kind of new, but like he was there. Chris Jericho, Christian, like very like legendary wrestlers. He got to like share the locker room with, and I got to see him wrestle Shawn Michaels. You know, I was at that WrestleMania in LA where like, they came out, they beat up Eugene, and Hulk Hogan's music hit. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, my brother's doing stuff with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. Like it was quite a trip, like to see all that like unfold, and really like kind of like charges you up as far as like, he can do that. And the funny thing is, when I asked my parents, like, hey, can I be a wrestler? They were all for it, because they're like, yeah, doesn't everyone just get like signed and become super rich and wrestle Hulk Hogan?
Yeah.
He had a little bit of like, well, he had to convince them a little bit more to be a wrestler. For me, they're like, yeah, go for it. Like, Sean killed it. So you should too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was very cool. And like I said, the whole time I was in high school during this time, I'm still just a kid, you know, watching my older brother on WWE TV. So it was really cool and very motivating.
Boxing legend Manny Pacquiao returns to the ring this Saturday for the first time in 2 years. And FanDuel Sportsbook is giving new customers exclusive 30-1 odds on either fighter to win when he takes on Yordanius Ugas. That's right. Now is the perfect time to give FanDuel a shot because you can win $150 on a $5 bet. FanDuel's always hooking you up with exclusive odds boosts, great promotions, and so much more. That's why they're America's number one sportsbook. And don't miss out on your chance to win $150 on a $5 bet when Manny Pacquiao returns to the ring against Yordanius Ugas. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code Renee. That's R-E-N-E-E to get in on the action. That is promo code Renee. Disclaimer, must be 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Virginia, or West Virginia. Odds boost available for new users only. Must wager on designated boost market. $10 first deposit required. Max bonus $150. Risk-free bet refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See full terms for both offers at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado. 1-800-9-WITH-IT for Indiana, 1-800-GAMBLER, New Jersey, and Virginia, or visit www.1800gambler.net for West Virginia.
Do you remember when I lost my wallet and your brother's didn't his girlfriend find
Yeah.
Weirdest thing.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I actually was just talking about losing my, I had Chelsea Green on, we're talking about putting good into the universe and things come back. And I was like, yeah, I lost my wallet one time on top of my car, drove away. Flew. I was on the phone with John, who I think was in Japan wrestling with WWE at the time, something like that. Drove off and I was like, oh shit, I lost my wallet. And then you DM'd me and were my brother's ex-girlfriend has your wallet. I'm
Because they lived out here in Vegas and I think she just found it. And she's like, oh.
What are the odds?
It was super weird. Happens. Yeah, then he messaged me. He's like, do you know Renee Young? Alicia found her wallet, so if you want to let her know.
So weird. Yeah, I had to go knock on this chick's door and get my, what are the odds that you lose your wallet? I don't know anyone in this town.
Right.
Especially then, I really didn't
of course, know anyone yeah,
in this
yeah.
town. So I was what?
And it just so happens to be someone who's also in the business, yes. like knows who you are and all that kind of stuff.
Everything comes back to wrestling, you guys. Everything. It is always connected. Because that must have been, right around when you came into, because I didn't even know you. Kind of know what's going on here. Anyways, crazy. So your parents, they are into wrestling?
They're very supportive of what we want to do, obviously, but they were never my dad always tells us a joke. He goes, I wish the dedication you put into being a wrestler, you put into being a doctor, because then you'd be the best doctor in the world.
What do your parents do?
So my dad, up until just recently, he owned a restaurant in Minneapolis called the Leaning Tower Pizza. He owned it for 40 years almost. Wow. And he actually just sold it. So he's finally gonna retire. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Dad.
And my mom kind of helped him with that. And then when they split up, she just kind of worked normal jobs for a while, but she recently moved out to California. So she lives out in Laguna Niguel now.
Good for her.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. She's loving it. And there's a very good Persian community out there. So she's all about that. And then my dad's actually looking to move to Temecula soon in California.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, go out to the wine country area a little bit. Yeah.
They're doing it right.
Yeah, yeah. So they're both kind of now they're starting to slowly retire and this and that. And my mom, she wanted to move to California forever. Mm-hmm. And when I turned 18, I started pushing. I'm go. I'm an adult now, fine. Which obviously at that time, no, I clearly was not. Until I got signed and made a bunch of money and bought my own house. She's okay, I think I can move now. I was yes, you can please go. I've been telling you to go for a long time. I know you want to. So she actually moved in January of 2020. So she gets out there and then and California has been super strict with COVID.
Yeah.
So she's out there for a month and a half and then just everything just shuts down. So she basically just had to sit at home she was going on walks and going to the beach and stuff like that. But so over the last 4 or 5 months, she's really been discovering all their places and stuff like that.
Out.
And she met this guy now. So everything's been a lot better now.
Have you met him yet?
Yeah. He's super cool.
Good.
Yeah. Super nice guy. You know, it's the funny thing is when she tells two of my sons are wrestlers, they get all who are these guys? So I met him. He's a super nice guy. He's harmless, you know?
Yeah.
And I was I don't want my mom to be lonely. I don't want her to be by herself. You know,
God, I wish my mom would date.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I wish.
It's never been weird to me. I know some people are kind of like, who's this guy with my mom? But yeah. I say, what's the flip side? Do I want her to sit at home and be lonely and have like nobody and stuff like that? Like, we can hang out with her and stuff like that, but you still need that like companionship.
Totally. 100%. Like, I would say that with my mom. My mom's a hell of a catch. She's a little firecracker. Like, you would like light it up.
Yeah.
If you're dating, but she's just like, has no interest. Doesn't like, yeah, I'm like, I wish that you had a companion. I wish you had something.
Yeah. And like I said, like, you can hang out with your sons and stuff like that, but like that, you need someone your own age to hang out with and all that kind of stuff. So I was always very happy and okay with her dating because she's a very smart woman. I don't think she's going to date some like piece of shit or nothing.
Sure.
Like, she's had a few boyfriends before this guy. They're all very nice, great guys, you know. Actually, she's a little firecracker herself. She's the one who broke up with them. So yeah.
Please, get out of here.
They're not keeping up with her. So
how old were you when your parents split?
13 or ninth grade, whatever age that is. Yeah.
I always thought that would be like a weird age to go through something like that. Cause I was so young, my parents split.
Yeah.
That it was like barely a blip on my radar.
Right. Just like how I'm like happy my mom has someone. Like, I don't know if I've always just been kind of a more like progressive thinker, but when they sat me down and said like, hey, it's not working out between us and this and that, we're fighting a lot, you know, I think it'd be best if we split up. Like, I was like, okay, like, yeah, if you guys don't like being together and you're miserable and you're fighting, like, I want you guys to both be happy. So if you guys want to split up, like, that's fine with me. Like,
there was time.
There was no like big custody issues. I didn't do any of that shit. Yeah. Like, it was just, you know, hang out with your dad sometimes. I lived with my mom, you know, and do it like that. And no, it never really had any like ramifications or any issues with me. Like, I wanted them to both be happy. And I said, being together, honestly, like the few times I heard them fighting, like that was really upsetting to me.
Sure.
I don't want to see my parents fighting or your parents crying or stuff like that. So I knew them splitting up would be for the best. And I was totally cool with it. I was happy for their decisions, you know, because they've always been cool about that with me. They're very like, we're very like all independent people in our family. So so they've always been very like, you know, whatever you want to do, like just don't do anything bad or illegal, but like whatever you want to do, like we support that. So I'll just like give it back to them. Whatever you guys want to do, you know, I'm cool with it. You know?
Have you ever gotten into like some trouble?
No, nothing bad. Like, I've gotten like a handful of like underage drinking tickets and stuff that.
Come on.
Actually, I got an underage drinking ticket the day before my 21st birthday. And
come on, man.
Yeah.
Wait till midnight.
Yeah, it was that. And I remember showing the cop my ID. I said, look at my ID. Like, I turned 21 tomorrow. And he was like, damn, you almost made it. And I was
what
like,
what a dick.
And I remember being like, are you fucking kidding me? And he started like he started blowing up to me. I was like, I'm not going to get fucking arrested. That's always been my thing. Like, I had TSA too. Like, I'll fight with the people until they say, should we call the police? I'm like, nope, you win. Like,
fine.
But yeah, no, never been arrested, never been to jail. My dad always says that, like, he's so proud of us. He's like, I've never had to bail my kids out of jail. I'm like, wow, dad, like, set that bar real high. But yeah, no, nothing too bad. I mean, like, we did do like bad shit when we were kids, like smash mailboxes and shit like that, but just never got caught. So
I feel like that's something kids should be doing. I mean, of course, I don't know. Everyone's so sensitive about everything. Be a kid, learn to get in trouble and get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, very basic vandalism. You spray paint some shit, smash a few pumpkins during Halloween, you know, like shit that when I look back on it, I was like, I do feel bad. Like, if I woke up one day and like my mailbox was smashed, I'd be like, oh, what the fuck? Like you don't think about the other people, but no, for the most part, I think we were pretty good kids. I mean, once we got into wrestling, it was just kind of like wrestle, like breaking shit in the house. Cause we were like dropping elbows through tables and shit like that.
What's the age gap between you and Sean?
Only 5 years.
So you guys definitely got it.
We wrestled a lot. But the funny thing is, like, he got hired so young. He was 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And when I got to WWE, it was about almost 10 years between our time there. So when I got there, some people were like, oh, like, Deshaun Daivari, you have a son? Like, I don't know. There's like a second generation.
Because
it was just so far apart and like what WWE was from when he was there, when I was there. Mm-hmm. But we're like, oh, like, damn, what's the age difference? You're like 5 years. Like, 5 years? Like, what the fuck? Like, you guys are like basically really close in age. I said, he just got hired super. He turned 21 while he was in WWE. Like, it was crazy.
How was it having him as a producer there while you were working? Did he kind of set you up? Did he give you like any advice on like kind of how to navigate the business behind the scenes and all that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think by design, he only produced like one of my matches. I don't know if they just said like, we don't want them working because I was on a lot of episodes of 205, but he produced the other match. So I don't know if they did that on purpose, but no, he gave me a lot of good advice coming in when I was, you know, coming into WWE. And even when I was an independent wrestler, like, because I said he shared the locker room with a lot of like legendary guys, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, you know, Undertaker, all these guys. So when he would give me advice on wrestling, he'd always be like, hey, this is what Chris Jericho told me. This is what Eddie Guerrero told me. So I knew it was coming from like very legitimate sources. But then once I got hired, he smartened me up a little bit to some backstage. Like one thing he told me, he's like, don't ever sell in Gorilla. Like, if you have like a shitty match, like don't come in a Gorilla and be like, fuck, I fucked up. I'm sorry. This and that. He's like, just, it's whatever. Because he goes, they might be like, oh yeah, like you do fucking suck. You know, something like that. He's like,
totally.
Or he says, if you get yelled at, you know, there's one time we it was a 6-man tag, but Enzo fucked up the time. And it was, and it was the crossover segment, which is like a huge deal. We didn't know that because they didn't tell us. She don't tell us shit. But we kind of fucked up there. Enzo kind of fucked up the time and we got messed up on crossover. We get to the back. He was smart enough to just dip. he just left Gorilla.
He's a good businessman.
He knew that.
He knows what he's doing.
And, Johnny kind of yelled at us a little bit because, again, crossover is very important. You can't fuck that up.
Yeah.
We didn't really know that. So, again, yelled at pretty good. And I just remember what my brother told me. He said, he's like, don't like argue, don't yell back.
No sell,
nod your head. Okay, I'm sorry. Like, it'll never happen again. And he goes, just go to the locker room and vent. So we get to the locker room. Like, that was the first time in my adult life in a long time that someone like yelled at me, that anybody else yelled at me. I would be like, yeah, fuck you. Like, well, you can't talk to me like that. I'm an adult. But that's a situation. You're like, okay. Then go back to the locker room and then I throw my back. What the fuck, man? Talk to me like that. I'm an adult, you know. But it was just little things like that. Like, don't sell in Gorilla. Just take it on the chin. It is what it is. And I said, okay. So I'm glad he told me all those things because I eventually ran into those situations and it worked out great for me, you know.
Yeah.
I never got like labeled as someone with like a bad attitude or something like that. Like, don't talk back to your producers and this and that. Like,
it's hard to bite your tongue sometimes.
Very hard.
You're like, what the? You're not used to being like yelled at or like reprimanded for something. Like,
especially a lot of us, like I said, we were on the indies for 10 years. So usually our last couple of years going into WWE, like, you're crushing it. Usually things are going on the way up. Promoters are happy to see you, happy to use you. You're doing well. The fans are into your shit. So you're kind of like feeling yourself a little bit. And then when you get there and then someone's like yelling about you about some like tiny minutia shit, you're just like, why are we even talking about this? Like, I heard this quote once, I don't even know if it's real or not, but something like Dusty Rhodes said that, like, if whatever you plan in a match, if you get at least 70% of it goes well, then like, just call it a good day, you know. It's like that. So sometimes when you hear like get criticized on these little fucking things, I'm like, who cares? But
did you ever get in your own head about some of that stuff if you were being like nitpicked about things?
That was definitely, because again, that's the difference between like a pro wrestling company and WWE. Like, they care about these small little things, and who knows, maybe that could be the things that sets them apart, you know. You see it happen to a lot of wrestlers where you start like, I never second guessed myself on the indies. I just followed my gut. And it usually went well. But when they tell you, oh, you need to do this, or you need to do that, you need to do that, you start going like, oh man, like, am I not as good as I think I am? Or totally, what's the deal, you know? And I saw it happen to so many guys, really talented guys like Ali and Buddy and Tommy N. Like, you get told these certain things, or when the guys down on the PC, you know, everything you did on the indies that got you there. And then they say, all right, well, now don't do any of that shit. And you're kind of like,
Magic carpet ride.
Yeah, no magic carpet rides and shit like that. So at times, but you just learn to kind of get over it. That comes, I think, with experience. Like, my first year or two was kind of like had that, but then after a few years, you kind of learn the lay of the land. You're like, all right, fuck it. I'm just gonna do me, and if they like it, now, like I said, sometimes they just yell at you because they have to, you know, justify their jobs. They gotta flap their gums about something. You can't come back. Like, you can come back and they should just say, hey, great job, thanks for the effort, all that kind of stuff. But they always have to say something, you know. They always have to nitpick one little thing. But if you're confident in yourself and you know how shit works, and like I said, once you're there for a couple of years, then you stop stressing about it. So my last 2 years there, like, I was really happy with everything I was doing because I thought everything was going well.
How surprised were you when you got the call that you were being released?
So, ooh, that was going back.
The dogs are also barking. The baby's crying. It's all going very well.
So when all the COVID releases happened, and that was when my brother got released, and we survived that wave, I was like, okay, I think everything's good. But my release was actually like the third wave. You know, I think like when Samoa Joe and those and the Iconics and they got let go, that was it was weird because I was like, man, like, Joe's been on commentary. Iconics, I think, were on WrestleMania. Yeah. Like,
they were all just booked.
That happened. But I remember thinking like, okay, WWE hasn't done like a mass release other than the COVID, but hasn't done like just random releases like that in a while. Maybe that's it. And then it happened again. And then Braun Strowman got released. And that's when I was like, fuck. I was like, if they fired Braun, like, No one's safe. So I wasn't like preparing for it. I just thought, I said, hey, it could be anybody at this point. Mm-hmm. But me and Tony were on like every episode of 205 Live, like mm-hmm. when it moved back to the PC, and a producer who's not there anymore told us like, when you guys aren't on the show, like the show fucking falls apart, because it's just a lot of like new guys, you know, who are still learning like TV style and all that kind of stuff.
Especially when you'll have like such a smaller window. It's not like Raw or SmackDown where, yeah, you know, it's tough.
So this producer told us like, hey, like when you guys aren't on the show, like the show kind of fucking falls apart as far as like, not necessarily match quality, but like just getting the right angles and then just understanding like WWE style of wrestling. Yeah. So because we were wrestling so much and we were doing a lot of tag stuff, we were getting a lot of praise from, you know, Shawn Michaels was telling us we were doing a good job and all that kind of stuff. I was like, I feel like we shouldn't be someone who gets released because we're doing well. Everything's going fine. So it was surprising on that aspect because I thought we were doing good stuff. And like, you know, they always say like, hey, guys who are like good workers, they can have jobs for life and stuff like that. But letting go Braun and Bray Wyatt and stuff like that, like clearly there's a changing of the guard in WWE and everything's changing right now. So
it makes me stressed for everyone to feel that way. Yeah. Like it sucks to feel that way of like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I feel like it's really hard to do a good job when you are working under that.
And the tough thing was like planning your personal life. Cause like I mentioned to you how I kind of want to make a move out to Las Vegas. And we were also looking at Tampa for a while. And this is like a crazy, like sign from God or something like that was I was about to put an offer on a house in Tampa. And I talked to my realtor and told her, hey, you know, I think we'll go with this one. She goes, great, you know, I'll send you the paperwork. And as I was walking back to my car, I got a text from my brother. And that was like Samoa Joe. And I kind of, hey, did you see all these guys got let go? I was like, is there more coming? And my brother's like, I think maybe, I don't know. Like, cause he wasn't hired back yet, but he's like, it's just kind of weird. Right. So I like call my realtor and I was like, you know what? Let's hold off for a sec. And like I said, I'm glad that we did wait because part of the reason moving to Tampa too, I said, well, if I'm going to be wrestling in Orlando a bunch, cause it seemed like 205. Yeah. It seemed like 205 was going to stick with NXT. I didn't think it was going to go back. So I said, I think I'm going to be wrestling in Florida a lot. So I said, well, fuck it. Why don't we move? I like Tampa. Why don't we move there? And just kind of, then it'll be an easy drive. You know, we're ready to go somewhere else. But when that happened, it made me kind of pump the brakes a little bit. I'm glad I did because. Yeah. All I kept thinking, I was like, God, if I get this like nice new big house and then get fired like a week later, I was like, what am I going to do with myself?
Like, that's the absolute worst. Yeah. I think that happened to somebody else.
I think Drew McIntyre said happened to him. Like, he like just moved to a new place with his fiance or girlfriend at the time. And yeah, you got like let go shortly after. And I was like, just joking. I was just joking about it with my girlfriend. I said, watch, like something's going to happen. We're going to get this house. I'm going to get let go or some shit like that. So luckily it wasn't my turn yet to get let go, but it was enough of a sign to be like, ooh, maybe some shit's changing. So maybe I should wait a little bit.
Man. Yeah. It's definitely a scary time. I feel for anyone that's waiting to get that 203 number pops up. Don't answer it.
But like we said earlier when we started the show that like, but it is a great time as well too, because there's so much wrestling out there. Yeah. So funny enough, when I got off the phone, it was Canyon who called me. My girlfriend told me, she goes, she's like, not that I was like looking forward to this day or nothing, but she's like, I thought about this day before. She goes, I never thought you'd like take it so calmly. And you almost had like a look of relief on your face. Yeah. I said a little bit. Cause like you said, like waiting for the other shoe to drop, like, it's going to fucking happen. It's not going to happen. So it's kind of like, all right, it fucking happened. Like, let's move on. Let's just move on with our fucking lives now.
Yeah.
So she was quite surprised. She goes, she's like, I don't know if you'd be like so devastated and this and that, but like, I feel like just cause my brother being in the business, and I think I'm just pretty smart to the business. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you can't take that shit personally. Like, I've always been a believer, like, this wrestling business owes you nothing. It really doesn't. So you can't be, those motherfuckers, how could they, you get the little chip on your shoulder, but like, I go, whatever. Like, it's their loss. That's the way I look at it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. If you weren't a wrestler, what would you do?
You want to know what my like secret thing is that I deep down wish, and it's one of my big life regrets, is that like, I think being like a rock star was like the one thing I wanted to do. And I have a huge life regret of never learning an instrument. Like, I wish I like, cause when I was like in seventh grade, I want to learn the guitar. And my parents were like, okay. So they bought me like a little electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And like, after like 2 weeks, I was still like, dang. And I was like, this fucking sucks, you know? So I quit that. But like, I always think back, I was like, if I had played the guitar from seventh grade up until now, I'd be a rock star, you know?
So I think about that all the time too, because I'm like, I think the same. Like, I bought a guitar. I went and bought like a decent guitar. I'm like, if I buy a nice one, I'll force myself to learn how to do it. And then I just fucking didn't. I was taking lessons for a little bit, and each time, like, if I had just stuck with it, by now I would at least be somewhat, I could function.
Decent, right? Yeah. And the way I looked at it too is that, like, indie, I always compare when people would ask me, like, well, you're an indie wrestler, what does that mean? I'd always say, it's just like being in a band. I travel up and down the roads for not a lot of money. I work in these little shitty bar shows. Sometimes it's just like my family and friends. Sometimes it's packed out, whatever. And you just kind of travel along, and hopefully someday you get that big record contract and you go from there. So I said, that's what indie wrestling was like to me. So I always thought, I said, I don't think I would have minded, like, me and my little band, like, get in a car and drive around. And like, I mean, I wrestled in bars. It's different than performing in bars, you know? Sure. And then if you, and like I said, I had the dedication to it. Like, after like 3 or 4 years, my parents were like, you still want to do this? I'm like, yeah, of course. And after like 7 years, like, are you sure you still want to do this? Like, I was like, yeah, I'm not fucking giving up on this. So I feel like I would have had that attitude with something else I would have done.
You have to, especially with something like, because it's not like you're going to make it in like 5 years, right?
Yeah.
It takes so much time to like really get those like hours under your belt to get your name out there for everyone to kind of like recognize who you are, what you're bringing to the table. Can you sing?
Can I? No, not at all. Really? That's the thing. Like,
this, I feel like as you're talking, I was like, his voice sounds like maybe he could do it.
So that's the thing. I had, like, it's like a little like secret. Like, oh, I wish I was like a rock star or something, but no, like, I have no musical talent. I can't, I can't sing. I can't, like, I can't read music. And so that's why, like, this is just a pipe dream I had, you know? So who knows, if I would have started younger and taken singing lessons and all that kind of stuff, who knows? But like, no, I feel like I'm very musically illiterate. Best way to say it.
What is the worst piece of advice that you've been given?
Worst piece
of advice? Like, is anyone giving you like advice that's just like, come on, that's not going to get me anywhere? Like, whether it pertains to life, to wrestling, whatever. I mean, the not losing your shit in gorilla is great advice.
Great advice, yeah.
Very sound advice.
One thing to me was, you know, some people, when I was an indie wrestler, like, you need to like be 24/7 dedicated to pro wrestling. And I was super dedicated to pro wrestling, but when I was an indie wrestler, there was nothing really going on Monday through Thursday. Wrestling shows were Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I knew some guys who were like, no, I'm all in on indie wrestling. This is all I'm going to do. I'm not going to have like a shoot job or nothing like that. I always like had a shoot job because I said,
what was your shoot job?
I had so many because, again, I could never, like, they were just like filler jobs until I like made it.
Did you work at your dad's restaurant?
I did work at my dad's restaurant. That's what paid for my wrestling school. Okay. I was so both of my older brothers were like servers there. I was the only one who actually worked in the kitchen. So I was like making pizzas and all that kind of shit. Because I just didn't, like, I don't
work. But yeah. They're probably making the real money.
Yeah. I just didn't want to like talk to people and shit like that. Fair enough.
It's brutal.
Yeah. So like I worked in the pizza kitchen. That was kind of helped me like pay for wrestling school. I had a few like bullshit office jobs. I was a bartender and a door guy in college for a little bit, like checking out. That was actually my favorite real job, was being a bartender and like a door guy, especially in a college town. Cause like a lot of chicks were like into that stuff. You're like,
meet those babes.
Yeah. Like, so I was like kind of the one, like, I'm the reason why you get into this place, you know? So yeah, a little bit of like power doing that. And then, did that for a little bit. And then they switched me to a bartender, and that was a really fun job. I didn't mind that because, A, you had the bar between you and the people, so that was kind of nice. Yeah. And like, you got the booze. So like, if, and like, when you're a bartender, like, a server can't be like, well, fuck you, I'm not bringing you your food. But a bartender, you can be like, I ain't fucking serving you then. I'm just going to ignore you all night and go to this person. Yeah. So like, people are a little bit nicer and stuff like that. And again, like, you know, you give a girl a free drink or something like that. She's like, yeah, here's my number. Yeah.
What is the best drink that you make?
So it was a college town. So I was just doing tons of beer and tons of like rum and Cokes and this and that. But anytime I get a lot of these girls who come up to me, they're like, oh, I want like a Skittle shot. And I'm like, okay, what's in it? They're like, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, what does it taste like? They're like, Skittles. So I used to go like take a shot glass and I'd grab like 6 flavored schnapps, like cherry, lime, everything. Like, psh, and just like pouring them. I'm like, here's your Skittle shot. And they take it and they're like, that was great. I was like, all right, it worked.
John and I went to this bar in Denver one time and they had Skittles flavored vodka.
Oh, really?
But they had the little like jug things of vodka set up, but they were, there was like Swedish Fish, Fuzzy Peach.
Was there candy in there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was like infused.
This was the first WrestleMania that we did in New Orleans. and we were there, and John wanted to recreate making it. So we had like divided all the Skittles by their color. And we were giving like a bottle of it to like Serona, like passing out some of these like shitty bottles of vodka that it was so ghetto. And there was so much sugar in it that it would have given you the worst fucking hangover. Okay. And one thing I would like you to tell me about that. I mean, I know you just recently talked about this, but what happened in Saudi Arabia with this? There's like a hard right turn after talking about Skittles vodka. What happened here?
So the Saudi Arabia deal goes down, right? We all find out like, okay, we're not.
This is like the first time going over.
Yeah, this is the very first show. So obviously you hear about it and everyone, oh, these are multi-million dollar deals. These are big shows. Jeez. Yeah. Big shows. At that time, everyone's kind of psyched. Like, we don't really know. Like, oh, shit, we're going to Saudi Arabia to wrestle? Cool. And at that time, 205 guys weren't doing a lot of international shit. So a handful of us were booked on it. All right, cool. We're doing some international stuff. A country we've never been to. It's going to be crazy. I'm sitting in catering. And one of the props guy comes up to me. He goes, hey, we're bringing an Iranian flag to Saudi Arabia. I'm like, oh, like, for me, probably, right? And they're like, yeah. They're like, but it's really weird. Like, it's really hard getting it there. It has to go on Vince's like private jet to get it there.
What?
And I'm like,
that another
yeah. So I was like, this seems kind of weird. So I Google about it. Okay. Oh, there's mad heat between like Iran and Saudi Arabia. And I kind of apologize for not being like politically in on that kind of stuff. But I feel like a lot of people in America don't know the geopolitics of other places, you know,
and I walked into that blindly.
Yeah. Like my parents never really smartened me up about it. And obviously when everything went down, they're like, oh yeah, you didn't know. I was like, no, I didn't know. So I went and talked to Vince.
As if going over there's not.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like,
you're on edge a little bit.
Well, so mind you, I mean, did you ever end up going? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we had to like sign these papers and stuff like that, that had like the rules of like Saudi Arabia and like.
Sign one of those. We were getting a call though about like what I had to wear and that
was
very strict.
So just the fact that we had to sign these things and you know, TR had to tell us, you know, all these like strict rules.
Like, tattoos.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff. And we all know certain things are like punishable by death. And like, so everyone's kind of like, oh, holy crap. So I'm talking to Vince about it, and he said,
"What else was on that? No alcohol, no tobacco,
no alcohol, right? No porn,
no porn,
yeah, no porn,
clear your phone,
no porn on your phone and stuff like that." So we told we were doing this segment where like you were gonna come out as like an Iranian, you're gonna do something with the Saudi trainees, which is like Mansoor. He was the only one who was like,
"Sweet man,
yeah, Mansoor. Very very nice guy." He was the only one who was like an American Saudi Arabian, kind of like how I'm an Iranian American, and the rest were actually like Saudi guys. So I talked to Vince and I said, "Hey, do you think this is kind of a like too touchy of a thing to do?" Because I said we obviously don't like do that shit anymore. Like, you know, we're not doing that here in America. And he said, no, like, it'll be fine. Like, this is requested to be part of the show and all that kind of stuff. So, well, okay, whatever. And this is one thing that people may not have understand. Like, I was only 2 years into the company. Like I said, these deals are really big deals. You know, I'm just a cruiserweight trying to make it up. I'm not going in there and saying no to shit. In hindsight, I should have, but, and I did afterwards when I said, we're never doing that again.
Yeah.
So I just kind of said, okay, like, I guess I'm kind of do what I'm told. Like a week before, I started having like neck issues a little bit. And like, I started getting like pain down my arm. That's getting kind of serious. And like the week before we're going to go, I'm wrestling Ali on 205 Live. And I give him a backstabber in the match. And as soon as I hit the mat, I just get like lightning bolts down my arm. And like, just from being a wrestler, I know like what are common wrestler injuries.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, oh shit, this ain't good. So I went and told the doctor. And all I kept thinking is when he said like, hey, okay, we have to like pull you off and put you on MRI and shit like that. I said, fuck. I said, Vince is going to think that I'm like milking an injury or faking an injury to like get out of this shit. But luckily we had the MRI to prove like, nah, he has like a herniation in his neck and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was like, I guess that segment's canceled. They called me and they said, hey, can we get your brother's information? And I go, what do you need my brother's information? Like, oh, we're going to send him to Saudi Arabia instead. So again, me trying to be like a good soldier, I said, hey, you know what? Like, I understand, like, if this is not a match or just a segment, like, I can still go. You know, I'm in horrible pain this whole time. Mm-hmm. So they go, you know what? We'll have you and your brother.
Let's get on a really long flight. That'll make it feel better.
They go, why don't we have you and your brother go together? Okay, cool. We got to do something together. Again, not knowing what this is going to turn into, I'm just kind of thinking like, I got to do something with my brother and WWE.
Yeah. It's like very kind of exciting thing.
Opportunities.
And it's just different stuff that we don't ever get to do when we're here.
Exactly.
You don't really see much beyond those things.
And just the opportunity that if this goes well, maybe they'll hire Sean back and we can be a tag team in WWE or something like that. You know, that was always a dream of ours. So I tell him, I know I can still go again, trying to be a good soldier and all that kind of stuff. No, I can still go. And again, 15-hour plane ride and fucking miserable. My neck is killing me. I have no strength in my tricep, any of that kind of stuff. So we get there, we do the deal. I'm in Gorilla trying to like pump up. I can't do a push up because my neck is so fucked up. And I wasn't supposed to take any sort of, I was on a complete like no contact list and my brother was just going to get bumped around. And then I, again, being the good soldier, I said, it's kind of weird. I just like stand there and watch my brother get his ass kicked. Right. Yeah. I said, how about the guy like pushes me on my ass? And they basically told me like, we'll allow that if you're like telling us right now that you're okay with it. And if you get hurt, like you're not gonna, like we're telling you, like you shouldn't do this. I said, no, you know, I'm tough. I can fucking do it.
Yeah.
So that's why in the segment, I get like pushed on my ass and just roll out. My brother takes all the bumps and that was it. So we do the deal. You know, I remember as we were walking back up the ramp, I'm still in full like character mode. My brother is smart enough to like grab me. He goes, hey man, like we fucking did it. Like we did something together, like soak this in. And I was like, yeah. Oh shit, you know, cool. You know, we go do the deal and it's all cool. And then when I get back home, that's when I start getting all the DMs from like people in Iran or people in Saudi Arabia and like BBC Persia picked up on it and just turned into like a whole, like yes. Look at this bullshit WWE did, you know, like yeah. Going into another country and just kind of making light of, you know, turning a wrestling angle into something that's very serious. And that's when I like got very educated on it. And yeah. I said, this was fucked up. Like yeah. We shouldn't have been doing this. Like we were smart enough to not do this in America, but we go to another country and do that. So I told the office, hey, I'm going to put out like an apology because, or just, hey, if this offended people, like, I'm sorry. I should have studied up on it more. Like we shouldn't have done this. And they said, go ahead, put out the apology, but just know, like, we're not going to retweet it. We're not going to apologize. This is just strictly on you. If that's something you want to do. And I said, yeah, I want to do it. I said, yeah. I'm not like a shitty guy. Like I'm trying to, I don't want to offend people. I don't want this to be bad. I want this to be a,
well, it's like entertainment blends with like real life stuff.
Yeah. So yeah. Touchy. Wrestling's so weird about that because if people saw that on like a movie screen or on a TV show, it wouldn't fucking matter. Sure. But because wrestling is just like pseudo, like, is it real? Yeah. It's kind of weird. So people were very offended by it. So, and one thing that really bothered me is that people in Iran were upset about it. Mm-hmm. How could you do this? How could you, you know, make us look like that and that kind of stuff? And I didn't know it was going to have that kind of thing. So that was really why I put out the apology. I said, oh man, I don't want people, if there's, because I still to this day have tons of wrestling fans in Iran, because there's just, you don't see that very often. You don't see a Iranian American in WWE, stuff like that. So anyone who's a wrestling fan out there, they were super excited to see like a fellow Persian man in WWE and stuff like that. So a lot of them were very offended, and I said, oh fuck, I'm not trying to alienate any sort of a fan base by doing stupid shit like that. So it became kind of a big deal, you know, got a handful of death threats and stuff like that. So right. So it got a little serious. I remember, I think Jim Cornette like kind of commented on it a little bit, being like, we used to get heat and death threats back in the day all the fucking time. Oh, I go, okay, this ain't fucking 1970s Memphis anymore. Yeah. Like, or whatever the fuck we wrestle. The world has changed. Yeah, I'm not trying to like do that kind of shit, or like WWE doesn't do that kind of shit. We're not trying to get death threats and stuff like that. That's not cool. Like, cause I said, if anything, like, this is just going to turn people off, you know? Cause, and there were plenty of people in America who were just like that was
You don't need more fans.
Yeah. They're like, that was a fucked up segment. You know, people who were, you know, aware of what's going on over there. So I said, you're really just alienating people by doing like fucked up shit like this. Yeah. So, and unfortunately, like the fans aren't still too crazy about the Saudi show and stuff like that. So I told them, I said, hey, going forward, like, that wasn't a good look. I said, I don't want to be a part of these shows anymore. You know, I'll just kind of stay. And that's not just me. You know, there was a handful of wrestlers who said, you know,
he never went back to Saudi Arabia after that.
No, like actually the next two shows, it popped up on my app and I had to like text Karana and be like, hey, you remember you said we're not going anymore. Oh, sorry. It was just a mistake. We just need, cause that's when they did like the world's greatest battle royal or some shit like that. So they just needed,
and so Neil stole the show.
So they needed a lot of bodies and stuff like that. So that was why like 205 guys were getting booked, but every time they said, oh, sorry. And they just took it off. And
that was that's good.
Yeah. So that was kind of, you know, they were cool about that. They said like, you know, I just don't feel comfortable going back. You know, it's just not a good look. And also like, I kind of didn't trust them a little bit. I didn't want them to like, well, you're here, like, hey, guess what, tonight you're gonna wrestle Mansoor, and like that's gonna be like the next step of it. So I just didn't want to get there and they said like, we're gonna go back to it now or some shit like that. You know,
just
so,
take yourself out of the equation.
I said, let's just back out of the situation. And luckily enough, I don't think I ever got any heat for it. They're always very cool about it. I never, because I kind of asked around. I said, are they like mad at me now that I don't want to go back? Because I know by like the second or third one, like a lot of people started saying they didn't want to go. Yeah. And I think I got to a point where like, all right, no, some of you guys are fucking going, whether you like it or not, you know? So, yeah. So it started again. So I always got worried. I said, are they going to say like, no, you know what? Everyone's going now. And then obviously the last time they went, there was that kind of issue where the plane got held up and stuff like that. So yeah, it was just kind of one of those things. I said, honestly, I just don't feel comfortable being a part of this anymore.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I went over there twice. And I mean, I had actually had a great time both times.
My time, other than like the backlash of that segment, time there was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was cool to see another country, somewhere I've never been. You know, they did treat us very well. Mm-hmm. We're a nice hotel, all that kind of stuff, you know. So
great spread of food,
oh you know.
My God.
So that stuff was all great. It was just that one segment that we did on the show just kind of really tainted the whole experience for me and, you know, and for a lot of people, obviously. So that was why I just said, you know, I'm just going to kind of remove myself from that situation.
Smart move. Okay, so September 23rd, 90 days are up. Your non-compete is up and you can hit the ground running. You're having some conversations already, I imagine.
Yeah.
You'll be ready to go.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Like
That's
I said, because one thing I always thought about before I got to WWE, like because I was so laser focused on WWE, it never allowed me to focus on anything else. That's why I said like my shoot jobs I had, I was like moving around and this and that, because every job I had, I was like, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be in WWE. I'm supposed to be wrestling. So now I can finally say like, I went there. I did it. I know what it's all about. I kind of feel like your success is chosen for you there. So you don't have to like harp on that and stuff like that. You can kind of just finally move on. And luckily my time that I'm moving on is when wrestling has blown the fuck up, you know,
doing it, baby.
You know, this company called AEW shows up and just turns the whole wrestling landscape upside down. So I said, damn, like
it's
shit's really changing. It's awesome to watch. And also like, I have so many of my friends that I came up with now, like I have so many friends in Impact. I have so many friends in AEW. I have so many friends in New Japan that like, these were guys who maybe didn't get a shot at WWE, but now they're all thriving in all these other places, MLW, NWA, like it's awesome to see. So it's cool that I know that like now, if I go to a different locker room, but, oh, tons of my friends are there and this and that, you know? So I'm very excited to see what's coming next.
Yeah. So I'm very excited for you. I'm glad we got to do this in person.
I know. I was really happy.
Yeah. This is like, really cool.
The Zoom ones are fun, but to get them to do in person is like
this
a whole different
This is so much better. Much better doing it in person. Yeah. And now you're out here in Vegas and you can see if you want to move out here into this fucking heat.
Yeah.
All right, guys, it's been Oral Sessions. Ari Daivari, you guys can catch him wherever he shows up in a couple weeks. Yeah.
Thank you to Arya Daivari for coming and hanging out with me inside my domicile. Much appreciated that you came over to my house, hung out, Ubered all the way over here in the blistering heat that is Las Vegas. And you brought a baby outfit. I'm not letting that one go. It's very nice. It's nice when people bring a gift, you know? I appreciate it. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. I certainly did. I loved being able to chat with him in person. So yeah, more of that hopefully in the future here for Oral Sessions. That's what I want in my crystal ball tea leaves predictions for Oral Sessions is some more in-person action. I love that. All right, guys, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Renee Paquette. Follow The Volume Sports at The Volume Sports and check out my YouTube page where you can see all this video. All of these videos would be the correct grammar on that. But yeah, all of these, all the interviews pop up on my YouTube a little bit after they've premiered through through the podcast version. So if you want to see us talk, whether it be in person or via Zoom, you can check them all out there. Until next time, this has been Oral Sessions.